I'm Dr. Rosari Griffin, and this is an interview with Lucy Taylor, who is a marine biologist at UCC, and we are going to speak about her book on the Irish seashore. Hello, Lucy. You're very welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you, Rosari?
Now, tell us a bit about yourself, Lucy, and how you became interested in becoming a marine biologist.
Well, I suppose I was very lucky in that although I'm from Dublin, I was able to spend all of my summers on the coast down in Kerry, and with my family, we would have always gone out to go fishing, to catch things for dinner, and, you know, growing up being able to eat mackerel and crab and lobster and look in rock pools for shrimps and things like that, I suppose it gave me a real love for the ocean, and also was lucky enough to have parents who taught me to care for the ocean and how important it was not to ever take too much or to damage anything. Just that experience of always being nearby.
And tell me, does this mean you have Kerry roots?
I have one grandfather who's from Killarney.
Lovely.
But apart from that, no.
Yeah, very good. But nevertheless, Kerry is a great destination for anybody, any time of year, but particularly in the summer.
Yes, yeah.
So it gave you a love of the sea. And then tell us, where did you go from that, we'll say, academically?
Well, it was years later. I mean, when I left school originally, I studied arts. I did an arts degree in English and history, mm-hmm. Because I always loved reading as well, and so I thought that that was what I'd be most interested in. But then all throughout my 20s, you know, I saved up and went travelling and did a scuba diving course and always went kayaking and swimming. And, you know, I always loved exploring the seaside, but it wasn't until I was in my late 20s and I went back to college for the second time that I really realised that something I had always thought was just an interest and just a hobby, I suppose, or a few hobbies, mm-hmm. to actually be something that you study and that you learn about formally and maybe even turn into a job.
Excellent. So what a wonderful turnabout. So you actually followed your passion.
Yeah.
They say you never work a day when you follow your passion.
Exactly.
And so you ended up as a marine biologist, and then you ended up writing a book on the Irish seashore. Tell us how all that came about. Bring us on the journey.
Yeah. Well, the book, I suppose, came about because it was really a friend of mine who was pushing me for quite a while to do something like this, because she has kids and she also lives in Kerry and lives on the coast. And she loved having lots of books to teach the kids about what was around them in nature. But all of the ones that she could find were British or European or just not specifically for Ireland. Mm-hmm. And when you're not a specialist, then it can be difficult to know if the things that you're seeing in the book are actually what you're likely to find in Ireland as well.
Yes.
So as I finished up the Masters in Marine Biology, and I was wondering what I was going to do next in terms of work and how to keep myself busy, I got in touch with the Collins Press, who are an Irish publisher, and asked if they'd be interested in publishing a book about the seashore. And they were, which was great. And then I regretted getting involved because I thought, how am I going to do this?
Very good.
In the meantime, I'd also got myself a job. So that's why a fellow student of mine, Emma Nicholson, I contacted her to see could she work on it with me, because it seemed a little bit daunting to do it by myself at that stage. Mm-hmm. But after that, it was just a pure joy to work on. I mean, it meant lots of weekends of travelling around the coast of Ireland, taking pictures and finding the different species that we wanted to put in. Mm-hmm. And then spending the evenings after work researching and writing about them. So it was
wonderful.
Really great to do.
And obviously there was a photographic element to all of that as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we took all the photographs ourselves. So they're not you know, very advanced photography or anything, but they are all taken on Irish beaches. And you know, there's lots of our friends and family's hands feature as they're modelling different seashells on mm-hmm. and things like that.
Lovely.
So I suppose it's nice to know that they're definitely here. They're definitely things that you'll find in Ireland.
And is it a technical book for, we'll say, the people involved in the area, or would it be more family friendly in the line of which your friend originally prompted you to do?
Yeah, it's definitely a book that you'd need an adult maybe with you to help you mm-hmm. out if you're a small child. But no, the intention is that it's family friendly. And since it's been published, I suppose the thing that would give me the most joy is when someone will send a picture of their child on the beach, you know, with a crab in their hand, looking it up in the book to find out what kind of crab that is, or
wonderful.
Something like that. And to think that you're really helping maybe other young kids to get more interested in something that they like, and to learn about what's around them and all the diversity that we have here, which is so special.
Now, as you know, we're broadcasting from Youghal, which is obviously by the sea. And I'm just wondering, and not wishing to put you on the spot now, but is there anything in particular you want to point out that would be available on the seashores around Youghal or the surrounding areas indeed?
Yep. I mean, a lot of the photographs in the book are taken from the East Cork area. Emma Nicholson, my co-author, her family actually live in East Cork. So, I mean, there's a great variety in the beaches along that stretch of coastline. So you have lots of lovely small little coves and rocky shores with rock pools. And then, obviously, Youghal is a much broader, flatter beach. And I suppose one thing it's nice to note is that in areas like that where there are lots of mudflats or, you know, just endless expanses of sand, to us, like, nothing lives there. But they're often really, really special places for lots of things that burrow into the sand.
Okay.
And you'll find the shells of those things. You know, people think of them just as clams or, you know, those shells that have two halves.
Yes.
You'll find lots of them washed up. And there are so many different types of them. And they're often really important food for sea birds as well and shore birds. So it's lovely not to just look at those big open spaces and think there's nothing there. And you also get seagrass beds. Areas around that part of the coast, which are really, really important. They protect the coastline, they provide shelter for small fish and for other small animals, and they're a really, really special thing that we have here in Ireland that it's really important to protect as well.
Now, can I ask you, when you said the seagulls or seabirds take the clams, do you mean the shell of it or the content of the shells?
No, so a lot of those birds that you see on mudflats, they have long beaks. And so they'll poke those beaks into the sand and they'll catch something that's burrowed in there. And usually they'll probably take the whole animal and then crack the shell open.
Oh, right, okay.
The contents, or sometimes a lot of those, if you think of a cockle, say, which is a small round shell that has two halves, and something like that might burrow into the sand, but then it'll send up a kind of a feeding tube to the surface, and so sometimes the birds will just chomp off that feeding tube as well, because that's the tasty bit. So depending on whether something has a shell that can be broken open or not, they might have a different method of feeding on it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And tell us about the shoreline. Are you concerned about the shoreline in terms of global warming and climate change? Do you think that is there a lot of erosion, I suppose, is what I want to ask.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people become really concerned about dunes getting eroded and things like that. And a lot of that is very natural, and there's really not very much we can do to prevent it if that's what's going to happen, because a lot of those seashore systems, they change over time as part of their natural processes. I suppose as we've seen so many big storms in the last few years, and we're told that the sea levels are rising, even if sometimes it might be difficult to see that, that erosion probably is going to get worse. And I suppose what's difficult for us as humans is to think that the coastline will be pushed further back, and we really have no power over that. The problem occurs when we have built structures on the shoreline, and then there's no space between us and the sea for things to move inwards inland as the sea moves inland. So that could be a problem. And in terms of the seashore and threats, I suppose the other really obvious one that we're all quite aware of is litter.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, as you walk most shorelines in Ireland, you're bound to see litter that's come from land and also litter that's come from fishing activities at sea. And it's important, obviously, to do our best never to drop any of that, never to make the problem worse, and also, where we can, to help by picking things up so that they're not eaten by anything else.
And tell us, is there any particular aspect of the seashore that takes your interest or fancy? For instance, is there a particular animal or insect or feature of the seashore that is particularly interesting for you that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, there's so many. every time I find something, it's favourite thing.
Lovely.
I suppose some of the things that are really magical, you know, we're all very familiar with crabs and seashells and all of the, you know, the little sea snails and all the things we find, which, I mean, I love. They're so special. But I think sometimes when you look into a rock pool in Ireland, it might be full of anemones, which are, you know, little blobs of goo stuck to the rocks, that, you know, waving tentacles. And sometimes the colours of those, when you see them, are just, they're like something from another world, you know. And to think that that kind of exotic animal lives just on our normal Irish seashore, you know, it always really amazes me. It's wonderful to sometimes see how different some of the creatures are.
Mm.
You know, where we look at David Attenborough programmes on the television and we might think that our waters are just dark and boring because, you know, we see tropical coral reefs or something. I think it's really special to remember that we have really amazing things here as well.
Mm-hmm.
That are interesting and worth protecting.
Yeah, indeed. There was a question. I want to ask you about moving sand. There's a cove in particular that I'm familiar with, and some years you get a lot of sand in it, and other years you hardly get any. I don't know whether it's to do with tidal waves or it's to do with global warming or what.
I mean, it could be a combination of quite a few things. I know that here, where I'm standing right now, I have a beach just down the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, after there are a few big storms in the autumn time, the sand will get washed right out.
Yes.
And, you know, rocks will appear that we've forgotten existed and all of that. And quite often, you know, you'd hear people then saying how dreadful that is and that the beach is destroyed and it's all rocky now. But then by the time we all come back for our summer holidays and the beach is full, the sand is back up again, you know, the sand, the beach is full of sand.
Yeah, it's an interesting feature.
It's really just the power of the waves and how much sand they can pick up and when dumped. And it could be something very local, like just waves or a very local current, or it could be a bigger pattern. It's hard to say, but unless it's there for a few years, I wouldn't say it's something to worry about. You know, beaches change, as I said, they're shifting, moving things, and that's quite normal.
Now, during the pandemic, the COVID-19, it seemed like all of nature flourished in the absence of human activity, particularly fish and wildlife and everything. Did you notice any notable differences along the seashore?
Yeah. So with small things like, again, this beach where I am now, the plants that would grow at the back of the beach on the land side, say, they, in the early summer, they had grown far further down the beach than they normally would because they weren't being trampled.
I see.
You know, there weren't dogs digging, there were no children playing, there was no one walking there. So things like that, they were definitely much happier. And a lot of those plants are quite important for preventing permanent sand loss, like what you're talking about. You know, plants often really, their roots hold the sand there. So that was a nice thing to see. And it was definitely good for the beaches. And I suppose any shore that has things living on it, you know, if you think of a rocky shore as well, people walking on that can often damage the things that live there in their shells. So the fact that there are fewer people trampling is probably a good thing as well.
Yes.
Saying that, a lot of those animals are very hardy as well. And so they can often survive us poking at them, with, you know, to a certain extent, as long as it's not done too much. But
Another question I have for you is that how come some beaches have a lot of shells and others none at all? And some years you'll see a lot of extra unusual shells that are brought in by waves, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any particular explanation for that phenomena?
Yeah, again, it could be something very local or it could be a wider current. So there are often even just one, or there is often just one patch of a beach that will have lots of shells on it while the rest of the beach might be clean. And that's usually to do with the local current where the water is picking things up, carrying it to a certain point and then drops it.
Mm-hmm.
And that those currents, you know, they stay the same. So they'll often just deposit shells in a certain place.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there are shells there to be deposited. So, I mean, usually the shells that you find on a beach are quite local to that beach.
Okay.
What was living in the sand until they die. And then some of the more unusual things, it could be because a lot of population peaks and troughs go in cycles. So some years there'll be a lot of a specific thing that will die off, and it could be for a natural reason. And obviously those shells will then get washed up. Or again, it could be because of a strange wind or a strange current, you know, that's just a weather phenomenon that might bring something in one year and then never again. So
I see. So tell us finally, Lucy, about the book. What is the name of it and where we can buy it?
So the book is called Ireland Seashore, A Field Guide. And as they like to say, it's available in all good bookstores.
Excellent.
Obviously with COVID, some places weren't able to get it, or, you know, especially smaller businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But it is available in all the bigger ones, you know, the Waterstones and Eason's, and in local places. And it's also available online directly from the publisher, Gill Books.
Gillbooks.ie.
Yeah.
Okay. And we can look for it. Is it by Lucy Taylor and somebody else, or is it just yourself?
It's Lucy Taylor and Emma Nicholson.
And Emma Nicholson. Okay, mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Lucy, thank you so much for giving your time this evening and for sharing all your love of the seashore. I've really enjoyed learning more about it. And in fact, I think I'm actually going to get that book the first opportunity I get. It sounds fascinating, and it's something I'd love to have for my own children as well, including myself. I'm the big child in the family.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lucy. That was wonderful. Thank you. And there you were listening to Lucy Taylor, who's a marine biologist at UCC, and she was speaking about her book On the Irish Seashore. You were listening to interviews with Dr. Rosari Griffin and guests, and this podcast can be listened back on CRY104FM.com.